Hello there, everyone, and welcome to the Sure IDC podcast, the show about anything and everything. This is Lucas, and let's see what topic we can get into today. We talk about movies, songs, video games, board games, food, books, personality traits, animals, history, anything and everything you can think of. So sit back, relax, because we're just here to have a good time. Welcome to the season 3 finale of this podcast. Holy crap. 3 seasons. And today, we're going to be talking about mythology, whether it be Roman, Greek, Norse, or whatever mythological creatures or beings you believe in. It all has an interesting story, has people, gods, and creatures. Today, we're diving deep into Greek and Norse mythology, and welcome to season 3 finale of the podcast. Now, with me, I have my good friend Jed. How are you doing today, Jed?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here with you again.
Thanks for being on the season 3 finale of the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we had a little bit of a hiatus before and got back together a couple episodes ago to do another one, and I'm happy to be here on a finale with you.
I know, right? It's just weird now being a finale. Do you think there's high expectations like that we have to do good?
I would assume so. I'm sitting here wearing a tux, so I figured, dress well and test well, or however that phrase goes.
I should have done a video podcast then.
Oh, no, you didn't want to do that. I may have lied.
I'm wearing one of my tuxedo shirts.
Yeah.
So first, I want to kind of, talk about season 3 finale a little bit. Just kind of want to catch up all the listeners, how the podcast has been going. With the end of season 3 approaching, and we are also approaching 2,000 listens in total, we have bypassed 70 episodes. So don't say I never did anything for you. Just saying. I mean, there's 70 episodes of content. Now, give or take, some of those might not be the best content, but they're still content nevertheless. And I mean, about what, like five or six of them have Jed on him, so just saying.
Yeah, including the wonderful episode where we discussed Ed Sheeran's seminal album, number 6, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Definitely go check that out if you haven't yet. If you like Ed Sheeran, I feel like that was a really good episode. I really like that episode.
It was there.
it was there. Yeah. But no. So it's, one of the things about it is this podcast would not be a thing without my guests. And that's 100% the truth. So if you have ever been a guest on the show, thank you so much. Same for you, Jed. You truly, are the heart of this podcast. I mean, I could just be me, but at the end of the day, I can't do the show on my own. So it's all of my guests and you that actually, make this thing alive. So I want to say thank you so much for that.
Well, I'll speak on behalf of all the other guests and say we are all honored to be able to be on the show and take part of it with you.
Yes, speak for all of them. All of them. No, just kidding. Yes, it's truly, if you're a guest, if you have been a guest on the show and you're listening to this right now, thank you so much. Truly, over 70 episodes. I mean, that's a lot of episodes. That's a lot of episodes. So another thing that wouldn't make this podcast a thing is the listeners. So thank you, you listeners, for listening and supporting this little hobby of mine. I want to say thank you so much for getting the podcast where it is today. Who would have thunk 3 years ago that this is where it would be? So I just want to say thank you all for making this be pretty much one of the most fun hobbies that I've ever done. So yeah, it was a fun time. We're wrapping up on season 3. This is going to be a 2-parter. First part's going to come out, of course, right now because you're listening to it. And then the next part will be coming out in 2 weeks, and that'll be the end of season 3. So let's get into it. So the topic of discussion for the season finale is mythology. Of course, you're a little fascinated in this, Jed. Tell us a little bit about what fascinates you about this topic.
I've just, always enjoyed it because this is the original fantasy stories that comes out of it. Granted, there were actually people, 2,000 years ago who believed all these different sorts of mythologies. So, typically Greek mythology is the most well known, and you can kind of mix in Roman there. They have an incredible amount of crossover, and practically, it's a lot of the same gods, the same, demigods and humans, and maybe just got a name swap kind of between the two. But others, Norse mythology is another, phenomenal group of myths and stories as well too. And that's one too that really got, I think, a lot more interest into it because of the Marvel movies with, Thor and Loki and Odin, who are all real Norse mythologies. But there's the world is surrounded with mythology all throughout its history. There's Indian mythology, when it comes to like Hindu and stuff like that, Native American mythology, Egyptian mythology. I mean, even, they're not necessarily gods, but there's even, North American mythology and, Paul Bunyan and the Big Blue Ox and John Henry. And so it's just so interesting to hear all these stories. And, typically there is kind of a basis behind of them or a reason for it. But this is like the original fairy tales or the original fantasy storytelling aspect that we have kind of today.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's fascinating because even with Greek mythology or even Roman mythology, those, I mean, they kind of worship them in a sense. I mean, they really were their gods. I mean, maybe not, to the extent of like Christianity or anything, but even then, in some cases it was.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. I mean, we view it as today. I don't want to speak and say nobody believes in the Romans or the Greek gods anymore, but most of it tend to believe like, yeah, this wasn't actually real. But no, there definitely was, thousands of years ago, people who did worship Zeus, for the Greeks, Jupiter for the Romans and different things like that. And, they had these different gods, and part of it was to have a god that essentially that they could pray for a certain thing or that they could blame on a certain thing. And so, there was gods for the harvest. There was gods for storms. There was gods for the sea. If you were going to be crossing the Mediterranean, you prayed to Poseidon for safety. So, no, I mean, these were legitimately, these stories, or at the time they weren't stories. They believed that these were actual gods, like Christians and Jews believe in God, like Muslims believe in Allah. But more or less today it kind of fell out of that, and now we view them more as these fantasy stories.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many similarities between the Greek and the Romans, and they're kind of the same thing. I mean, we could do a podcast topic over the Greek and the Roman mythologies and how similar they were, but it wouldn't kind of be fun in a sense. Like, they're almost too similar to even talk about.
Yeah, no, it really is like it, you definitely could, but a lot of it's just like, oh, here's how Artemis and Diana are the same. Here's how Zeus and Jupiter are the same. Here's how Hera and I'm already blanking on what her
Saturn?
Roman equivalent is.
Is there someone named Saturn? I know their planet names, right?
There was Saturn and Uranus. They were Titans. And
Uranus?
Uranus was Ouranos. Yeah, Uranus. And
Uranus?
Saturn was Kronos.
No, even Pluto was one as well, wasn't then?
Yeah, Pluto is a god, or the Greek equivalent is Hades. So I mean that's the god of the underworld there. The big three in terms of the Greek gods slash Roman gods were, on the Greek side, it was Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades, the three brothers. And they kind of divided up, and Zeus became the king of the gods, because he was the one who even saved them all, but was the lord of the skies, the lord of thunder. Poseidon got to be the lord of the seas, and then Hades ended up being the god of the underworld. And so there were their Roman equivalents being Jupiter, Neptune, and Pluto.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, they're just so similar. I mean, they're pretty much just different names, right? I mean, It's all they're the same person, really. It's just the different names and maybe a little bit tad differences here and there.
Yeah, a little bit. Sometimes maybe the Romans gave, you know, maybe a bit extra to one god or another. I'm going to take this from an author's interpretation, so I can't necessarily say how true this is. But Rick Riordan, who is very well known for the Percy Jackson series, kind of up in this follow-up series, which focused more on the mixture of the Romans and the Greek gods, even kind of stated how Athena was more well known for her wisdom, but she was also the goddess of war, whereas vice versa, Minerva, her Roman equivalent, was more well known for her being the goddess of war compared to being the goddess of wisdom. Somebody could obviously correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think that's how he kind of did it. Now, I don't know specifically if that was meant to be like a creative liberty for storytelling purposes, or if that was something that was actually kind of like a true difference between the two of them, where even though both interpretations were the goddess of wisdom and war, one skewed more towards wisdom and one skewed more towards war.
Well, I think that that's definitely, war is a big aspect of things. Even, I mean, I know we're not talking about Norse mythology yet, but we can, even that has a big aspect of that too. War and fighting and armies and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, when we started talking about it is, when you were like, oh, well, it was a story, it was, folklore, it was whatever. And that's really how it all started was in literature or storytelling, and that's really just the way that it was back then. Was it started to just be showed in storytelling of books or maybe poems and stuff like that. So, of course, two popular books that probably everyone listening to has probably read is the Iliad and the Odyssey. Are you big fans of those work?
I'll be honest, I don't know that I've read the Iliad in its
Oh,
entirety, but I know
really?
that one is the one that goes over like the Trojan War, really focuses on the character like Achilles, is what most people originally kind of take from that one, but I believe Achilles represented the Greeks, but and Hector, I think, was the leader for the Trojan armies, and it all started because, you know, the princess of one of the Greek cities was kind of stolen away by the young prince Paris, I guess. So I know enough about this if I'm being correct so far. But then the Odyssey definitely was one. I think I had to read that one for school. But it leads to an interesting story, and it takes the character of Odysseus, who was introduced, who was a key component of the Iliad as well too, and talks about his journey. Which is really this, maybe not comedic, but this misadventure of him trying to get back home, and the different trials and tribulations of him having to go, all the way from Troy back to his home in Greece. And yes, for a lot of people, both of them, usually at least one of them, if not both of them, are very commonly taught in school. So it's easy for that to be a big introduction, for students all across, certainly the US, but probably across the world, into that type of literature, into that mythology.
Well, Homer's work is really a classic. I mean, they just came from poems and stories. I mean, it's fascinating that back then, like the stories that they were able to create and the monsters they were able to create and the trials. I mean, and it delved deep into other just human emotions or problems, like the sirens and the temptations and stuff like that. But it is kind of interesting that these people were able to come up with these elaborate stories back then and come up with these characters and these creatures and these gods and everything.
Yeah, and I mean it's interesting too because, and I think even the phrase "between a rock and a hard place" actually originally comes from the Odyssey. Speaking of when Odysseus has to sail his ship between the rock, which is where Scylla, like the seven-headed monster, nine-headed monster, many-headed monster, we'll go with the many-headed one. was located at, and then the hard place being the whirlpool that was caused by Charybdis. And I, you know, it's interesting because more than likely that was probably a real location where something along the lines of a whirlpool was located. And while I'm sure there wasn't a many-headed dragon there stealing people, you know, there was probably something that was very dangerous on the other side that made this a very scary place for sailors to have to sail in between that could have caused problems. So there probably was actually a key real world inspiration even for like that moment of the story.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were taking like actual events that maybe happened, or maybe they read in parchment or whatever, and they were able to kind of, add maybe some monsters to that or something.
But
So,
I mean, no, go ahead.
no, you go ahead. I was gonna move on, so you finish the thought.
Oh, yeah, all I was going to say is it is interesting. I don't know if this was going to be something that you're going to come to, though, but Greek mythology has really kind of been driven into a lot of even more common pop culture to the point as well, too. So, you know, like I said, everyone often reads Homer's epics, you know, the Iliad and the Odyssey. But there's a lot of people our generation that will talk about how they absolutely loved the Hercules movie growing up when they were little. Which is specifically, and I think Hercules is technically the Roman interpretation of the character. I believe Heracles is the Greek interpretation, but either way, that's coming straight out of Greek-Roman mythology. And then something that I previously mentioned already too is Rick Riordan, who has made his entire career off of taking Greek mythology, Roman mythology, and in more recent times too, Egyptian and Norse mythology. And being able to adapt these new modern stories while taking these characters in and almost introducing them as real in some aspect, at least in terms of the storytelling purpose, and creating new myths, as you will, with these characters. So it's become a very, very timeless thing, as well too, with these characters.
Well, that's what I was going to actually add was, are you a fan of Riordan's work?
Yeah, I really enjoyed. I haven't gotten past the first three series necessarily, but I
There's a
really was a
lot.
big fan of the. So it was the Percy Jackson was the original one, the one that really kind of made him famous and put him on the map. The Kane Chronicles was kind of his next one, which focused on the Egyptian, and then oh, I forget what the
Yeah,
technically the series title was.
he came out with a newer series too.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't remember if it was like the gods of Olympus, Percy, you know, there was another one, and that's where he kind of introduced the Roman aspects of the characters and things like that. And then I know he's gone on, I think he's done a Norse mythology series. He's really carried on with the Greek Roman series. And I think there is actually is a he's currently in the middle or has just started a second specifically like Percy Jackson series.
Yeah, so he started, I mean, he did the Percy Jackson series, but then I think he even like kind of did a separate series that wasn't Percy and all those characters, but it was in the same mythology. 'Cause wasn't that the Lost Hero, that was still
Yeah, it was a.
Greek.
So it was that one, the very first one was focused on the Romans. So it kind of gave the impression that it was going to be, you know, same universe, but an entirely different. And then I think kind of the cliffhanger or, you know, the twist at the end was that they were going to bring in the characters from the Percy Jackson series into the rest of this series. And so really it was like from books 2 through 5, you had the combination of these new characters with the Percy Jackson characters.
Well, I think the newest series is still Greek or Roman, because I'm looking
I
it up
think
right
so.
now, and it was just talk about Hades and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
And I mean, and that is, he's done a phenomenal job for the most part writing with that. And it's
yeah.
been, you know, very interesting. It is, it, and I don't mean this in a demeaning way. It's a very simple literature, which means it's great for, you know, teenagers to be able to pick up and understand very easily and enjoy as well too. It's good young adult fiction.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think I even read a little bit of the Kang Chronicles, but then I stopped reading. I didn't get back into it, but yeah, I was curious on what your thoughts were on him because just because he is such a big advocate for that type of mythology in the current time period.
So no, and it's interesting, and it's a way that has kept, Greek mythology as very timeless and very in date. That's not the right word. That's not even a phrase, but
Indeed.
yeah, something that people are still reading or are interested or want to learn more about. So.
Yeah, especially since it's just everywhere. I mean, you hit it on the head where Greek mythology is pretty much in everyday lives. I mean, they reference it in pop culture songs, I mean, even medical terminology, Achilles' heel and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's just like, Greek mythology is kind of even just kind of oozed its way into just everyday metaphors or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because even another aspect that we see it in that sometimes when we say it we're like, oh yeah, that makes sense, but it has been a major part of our astronomy. So I mean, the easy aspect is taking a look and saying like, oh, all the planets are named after Roman gods. Mercury was the messenger god, Venus the god of love, Mars was the god of war, Jupiter was the god of all. Saturn, Uranus were two Titans. Neptune was the god of the sea. Pluto was the god of the underworld. And then Earth, which
Like
I think
Gaia or something
Terra.
like that? Or Terra?
Yeah, so it's like Terra and Gaia. I want to say those are the two names. So again, I think Gaia is the Greek. Terra is the Roman, so Earth itself, is not technically from a Roman name, but some of the other names that you can kind of think of are, Terra is typically another word for Earth as well too, as a Roman god. But even when it comes to like our astronomy, is that we do have things. So Orion is a actual Greek mythology archer. When it comes to our I think even some of like the major constellation or the zodiac signs,
Oh, yeah.
Andromeda was a character as well too, or well known for being in the story with Perseus. When most people know Perseus and Medusa, but the reason that Perseus went to go get Medusa's head in the first place was to save Andromeda. So Andromeda's the name. So really our astronomy and the certain names that we know for stars and constellations, actually take that back, stars are all Arabic, I believe, but constellations and planets is all also derived almost entirely from Greek and Roman mythology as well too.
Yeah, that's true. Dang, it really has kind of just integrated itself into everything. But I mean, it's hundreds and thousands of years old, so I mean, of course, it has integrated itself into stuff. And I mean, it's timeless lore, so, and I guess it's more popular than the other, mythologies or whatever.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because it is older. Part of that, I think, is it's what we have of the stories are far more in depth and probably more well preserved. So, when it comes to, one example I'll use is that probably a book that a lot of students have read too is Edith Hamilton's Mythology, is a well-known book that really kind of has cemented a lot of these mythological stories. It is majority Greek mythology. It does at the back of it, though, I believe it actually does hit on Norse mythology, but the Norse mythology section is maybe, a quarter, if not less, a quarter to a fifth of the size of what they have for the Greek mythology. And so,
Really?
yeah, and in that one, and it's not because, they were like more interested in the Greek, it's just that what is kind of left of Norse mythology. While it's super interesting, and there's still a lot to kind of take from it, just doesn't have kind of the depth or just the catalog that Greek mythology does when it comes to stories.
Yeah. Well, it was a difference in technology. modern advancements. I mean, the Greeks and Romans were ahead of their time in inventions and modern technologies and preserving things and making sure that stories are written, to not only entertain but also to live on. While maybe, the northern Germanic folks up in Scandinavia, and the Nordic people were just more so, writing on stones and stuff like that. Not saying anything bad about it, but I'm just saying that it's different aspects, different cultures, different areas of the world. So.
No, and that's 100% true, and probably the most likely reason is that while Norse cultures, which I'm descended from, so I take no offense, they were still advanced. They still had forms of communication and things that, like you said, the Greek and the Roman cultures were far superior in terms of what it came to communication and preservation, than what we know of kind of with the other ones. So, and just how they changed the world when you think about, the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire, specifically more the Roman Empire and how large that it was able to get at a certain point, it's not surprising that we were able to have a far better understanding and a far greater catalog of Greek Roman mythology than we do of really anything else in the world.
That's true. And you threw around a lot of names than we did. Let's kind of talk a little bit about the gods specifically, who they were. We can kind of like go deeper into demigods and creatures and stuff like that. But of course, you already kind of hit it on the head. The main gods, I guess. I mean, the 12 gods, I guess. Zeus, Poseidon, Hera, Hades, Apollo, Hermes, Athena, Hephaestus, Aphrodites, and Ares. There's probably a couple of other too. Artemis. Did I get all of them? I think that's pretty much all of them, correct?
I don't remember. I blanked on if you said this one. I think the only other one that maybe is considered one of the 12, if you didn't get him, was Hestia.
Oh, okay. Hestia.
But
Oh yeah, right
no,
here. Yeah, it says Hestia right there. I missed it.
I think you hit on pretty much all of them, so.
So of course everyone knows Zeus. I mean, Zeus is like, would you say Zeus is the most well-known god of the world?
Probably. I mean,
Folklore
you know,
god.
he, yeah, I mean, he is the, I mean, well, it depends because I think at that point, like I mentioned kind of earlier in the beginning of the episode, is that, if we jump to Norse mythology with Thor being one of the most well-known superheroes at this point, I could see an argument for Thor being the most well-known mythological god. But beyond that, if we were to take out comic book interpretations of this, yeah, I think Zeus probably would be the most well-known god, simply being the fact that, he is the king of the gods. And that carries some weight with having a title like that.
Of course, if you don't know who Zeus is, he's got lightning bolts. He's the god of the sky. Jed already said it. But yeah, I mean, he probably is one of the, I mean, he probably is the most well known, at least in Greek mythology. I mean, if you were, I mean, how many people have actually called their dog Zeus, stuff like that. But, I mean, and you nailed it earlier with Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades as kind of the main three, the brothers, which they were children of, which you already named the father.
Yes, and I believe they were all children of Cronos. So those were the three sons, and I believe there was, I want to say it was two daughters, is that Hera and Demeter were also daughters of Cronos. And I don't remember if there was a prophecy or something, but Cronos, I want to say, pretty much decided he wanted to be king, and he did not want any of his children to succeed him. And so instead, he ate all of his children, except for one, with that being Zeus, which his wife, which I believe the name was Rhea for that one, kind of hid from him and actually fed him a rock instead, which is hilarious to think, like, you know, this is an all-powerful titan who I believe is the Lord of Time, and he gets confused by a rock, thinking that's his child.
Like, oh, my child is very
So,
still.
yeah, and so, you know, Zeus, gets to take the time to age and get to the point where he can defeat his father. So he slays his father, and either cuts off his head or cuts him open, one of the two, and, you know,
Probably
saves
both.
all of his siblings. Yeah. And so then his siblings are saved because, you know, for however long they were inside the stomach of this titan, you know, they lived. That had to have been an awful experience for them that sadly we never got a story about. You know, I kind of wish we could have known what happened in the, you know, 10, 15, 20 years that they were residing in their father's stomach.
That
But
would be an
yeah, and so
interesting
that's
story.
how the gods took over.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just also funny that the mother was all like, "You know what? This needs to happen." But I mean, of course, you know, these particular gods are the most famous in movies, literature, TV shows, whatever. You know, Mount Olympus, people will even know that as well. But I mean, you pretty much know all of them. I mean, we kind of mentioned a little bit. I think there was only a couple that we didn't mention because you mentioned Athena, right?
Yep,
You mentioned
Athena.
Ares. Did you mention Ares? You actually didn't. I don't think you did.
I don't know if I think I had vaguely mentioned Ares and just said that he was a god of war. I know you listed him when you mentioned the group, but it is interesting because there are two gods of war. You have Athena and you have Ares, and I almost think they were given the impression because Athena was also the goddess of wisdom, that hers was almost more strategy based when it came to it, whereas Ares is the, to borrow from Norse terminology, the berserker. This is just the heat of rage and hatred, is what Ares brings to the table as a god of war. So.
Yeah, just different types of war. We mentioned so the originals. Hephaestus was the god of s what was it?
He was like, it's almost like he's like the god of fire, of
Okay, that's right.
inventions.
I was gonna say the
And there's all,
god of steel, but that's not.
well, I mean, that would be pretty close to god of steel or iron, or, you know, that's kind of the impression that's given. And there's honestly a funny point to make with him is that, Hera is, you know, the queen of the gods, and she's meant to be like the god of like families and things like that, and yet she thought Hephaestus was so ugly when he was born that she threw him out of Olympus, and he is a crippled god because of that. So this queen of the gods, the mother of the gods, the god of family, despised one of her family members so badly that she permanently ruined his life.
Well, none of the gods were great beings. I
No,
mean,
they were
like,
not.
they're definitely not, you know, I mean, it's interesting because you see them both ways portrayed. You see them as not kind, but you see them as, you know, kind and just and honorable and everything. And then you have other terms where you're like, man, Zeus is a jerk.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, you hit it right on the head though. Like for the most part, none of the gods were really that good of people. I mean, Zeus slept with more women than you could count on, you know, the entire population's hand. We'll keep it safe and just leave it right there at that one. Hera, you know, for being, like I mentioned, the goddess of family, did not seem to really care that much about family. Aphrodite was the goddess of love, and even though she was, I believe, married to Hephaestus, she only wanted to be with Ares. Ares was a rage monster. Poseidon and Athena had like a constant bickering and quarrel. I think like Apollo and Artemis were both like pretty vain people overall. I mean, Dionysus was essentially the god of drunks. Been party, you know, he's the god of wine, so
I mean, why do you
he
think
enjoyed.
why do you think that they wrote them that way? I mean, like, if they were going to create these beings that were all powerful and you know, the gods of their world, why do you think they made them total tool bags?
That is honestly a good question, because it is one, and I don't know if it made it seem more realistic or more acceptable for them to be fickle gods at that point.
Just because, made it more dramatic.
Yeah, more dramatic, or hey, if this god, you know, clearly isn't perfect and is willing to, you know, be jealous or, you know, commit adultery or certain things like that, it at least makes it a little more understandable when I pray for rain and they say no. You know, I can already see, you know, they're not that great of a person in the first place. They just hold far more power than I have. So
it was almost kind of like an out. It was like, oh, if I pray for rain and they don't give it to me, then it's understandable because they're jerks.
Yeah. You know, something like that, where I know this guy's a jerk anyways, because he's cheated on his wife 500 times. So, you know, him cheating on his wife 500 times, him not giving me rain. I can see a correlation.
It's just interesting that they actually did that instead of making them, you know. But I guess it's a story. I mean, that's what the point of a story is, you know. And anyway, but it is kind of interesting. So you also mentioned, you know, Zeus, you know, slept with a lot of people. That's how you get the demigod, which you already mentioned one. You mentioned two or three at least. Probably the most famous demigod is Hercules, or at least that's the Roman side of what you said.
But, yep, yeah, and we'll use Hercules because they're interchangeable. But you're really 100% correct. Hercules is typically considered the most famous of the demigods. I don't think that Odysseus was a demigod. I think he was just human, but Perseus, I'm pretty sure, also was. And I think so. I believe both Hercules and Perseus were sons of Zeus. Again, going back to the point of and so with demigod meaning, you know, one parent is a god, the other parent is typically human, but honestly I think there was a story where Zeus slept with a cow too. So I haven't heard of the demigod cow half. Demigod, but half god, half cow, but you never know with Zeus. So
we should write that.
Yeah. But so I know there's those. I mean, I don't want to say that every famous Greek hero you hear is a demigod, but I think a lot of them are. But you could throw out, you know, Jason from Jason and the Argonauts, Theseus, who I believe went up against the Minotaur. Orpheus was one who went to retrieve his loved one from the underworld. So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, impressive Greek heroes as well, too. And you know, there's certainly tragedy among them, but the interesting thing for me is that for the most part, Greek mythology comes across to me as very lighthearted. Not that everything turns out well for all the characters in certain things, you know, even referencing Orpheus, you know, he went to the underworld, he found his loved one, he brought her, and when they were like three steps away, the one thing she could not do was turn back, could not look back. Otherwise she would have to go back to the underworld forever. So they're like three steps away from leaving the underworld and she looks back.
No.
And so it is like you have that, or even with Hercules, you know, part of his, I think it's the 12 labors, was because he killed his family on accident.
Yeah.
So there certainly is like some darkness in a lot of these, you know, stories within the mythology. But to me, compared to, and it might be something we'll talk about later on with Norse mythology can be really lighthearted, but then can also come across as incredibly dark and bleak at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's just the nature of storytelling, especially for that time period. I mean, you know, there was a lot to be happy for, but there was also a lot, you know, there was a lot more darkness back then as well, which is understandable.
Yep. And I'm trying to think with it. I can't picture it off the top of my head, but the one thing that kind of struck out to me, that maybe this was more in terms of Norse mythology, but Greek mythology, from what I remember, doesn't have a like apocalypse moment, or Norse mythology is well known for having Ragnarok. For the life of me, I cannot remember, in my time reading up on this stuff or anything, that Greek mythology had any type of equivalent like that, to where, a point would come where the world would end. And you just wonder, is that something that they truly just never imagined, something like that? Was it we just never got to that type of story before the gods, fell out of favor? Because, I mean, we know historically that the Greek slash Roman pantheon was thrown aside for Christianity, that Rome did end up converting to Christianity, and that's where you kind of see the fall of this religious belief go to the wayside, and it go from actually being a religion to a mythology at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe you just never got to that point. But I mean, there were just so many other stories that they told. But you're right. I'm not like a master in Greek mythology, but yeah, I don't rem I mean, you would think that they would at least teach about that. That would be some if something was written like that, that it would at least mention it in school and stuff like that. But I mean, another demigod that we didn't mention, which we mentioned before but didn't mention again, was Achilles as well. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the demigods are portrayed. You don't really see the bad side of the demigods. I mean, you know, in every Hercules movie, there's no bad side to him. You know, in every movie that has Achilles in it, there's no bad side. It's just warrior or whatever. But I mean, they had bad sides as well.
Yeah, and I think even if I'm remembering correctly, which I will, somebody can definitely correct me if I'm not, is I almost want to say that even Jason, who was now well known for the story of Jason and the Argonauts and going and getting the Golden Fleece, I think at one point there was a princess or like a sorcerer or somebody, who aided him, and it's like he promised that she would be his wife, and then he ended up like abandoning her instead. Where it's just like, this guy, we're being told that he's the hero of the story, and yet some of these guys do some shady things, whether it's truly by their fault or not, because some of this also kind of shows like, oh, here's the gods intervening or doing something to the hero to cause them to do something like this. So, I mean, that was entirely a part of the Odyssey with Odysseus, is that what happened is Odysseus, when he slayed the Cyclops, Polyphemus, enraged Poseidon, and that was a huge part of the problem for him, because Polyphemus was actually Poseidon's son, so.
I mean, it really just depended on the situation, I guess. Maybe the point of the story or the theme of it. I think you were right to say that maybe making the gods and the demigods not perfect, that it was more relatable with people.
No, and especially when you probably saw that, a lot of those same traits and people that you knew every single day or things like that, are certainly among your political leaders to that point. I don't remember specifically if Roman mythology was kind of still the religion of the time, but a lot of the Romans got to see very insane Roman emperors at the time, whether it was Nero or Caligula or, plenty of other ones. So if the gods could be insane, it certainly explained why their emperors could also be insane.
Well, but it is also interesting that you did that in today's standards, you do see kind of both sides to the gods, but you still don't see both sides to the demigods, the human. They're always the hero. They're always the perfect person, in today's movies that are made about them or whatever. I mean, Disney even made, obviously the animated Hercules movie. But it is very interesting that you don't really see the bad side of that. It's almost like, not to go into a rabbit hole right now, but it's almost like fairy tales like Jack and Jill or not Jack and Jill, Hansel and Gretel. Which mm-hmm. even Jack and Jill was actually, did they like end up breaking their necks or something like that?
Yeah.
But
something.
But you know, it's even just like fairy tales like that. Like you never hear, you know, the original Brothers Grimm version of them. You hear, you know, the happy version of them. And so it is kind of interesting. The Disney-fied version. The Disney-fied, yeah. So it is kind of fascinating that they kind of do that with Greek mythology as well when it comes to the gods and the demigods. And usually, half the time, the demigods hate the god that had them.
What was that?
Well, I was just saying that a lot of the times the demigods hate the gods that have them.
Oh, yeah. Yep. No, I mean, you can see that or... yeah, where they're not necessarily doing it in the name of like their parent or anything like that, but
yeah,
it can be very much that case. Or oftentimes we see it's even that parent is the one that's, you know, causing the potential strife in their life, anyways.
Yeah.
Or I think, you know, probably in a number of instances it was, you know, they may have been a child of Zeus, and Zeus maybe doesn't, you know, dislike him or anything like that, but more or less it is Hera. Mm-hmm. Who was mad because this was a child of Zeus that was not with Hera.
Yeah.
And, you know, she hates anybody who was conceived who's not her child, but Zeus is their father. So even that, you know, maybe Zeus isn't the one who is causing the problems for the child, but indirectly he is because his wife is mad at him for going again and once again having another child out of wedlock.
Yeah. Well, we also mentioned several creatures, I guess. You know, you mentioned the Minotaur, and I think you mentioned something else too, right? Cerberus or something like that? Did you mention that?
I didn't mention Cerberus, but that is another great one. The three-headed hound who guards the underworld. I'd mentioned Scylla and Charybdis from the Odyssey.
Oh, that's right.
The Hydra, which is another thing that, again, has kind of become a well-known thing in pop culture, even outside of that, well-known in Marvel. But just simply the idea of a creature or a thing that you cut off one head and two come back.
Yeah.
You know, the Hydra has become very well-known in pop culture.
Even though have you seen the things on the internet where it's all like, where the Hydra symbol is like an octopus with multiple tentacles, and it's all like, wait, that's not a Hydra. but yeah, I mean, you've got you know, the Pegasus, you know, the winged horse, you got the Cyclops, that's a famous one as well, just the one-eyed, you know, beasts or giants or whatever. I did mention the Sirens, you know, that, mm-hmm. that lead men and to their doom. But even like Medusa, like, I mean, yeah, she was a person, but even then, she was kind of a creature. She never really, right? She was a creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was, so that's another interesting story that even goes back to, you know, the gods not being great people. I believe also Medusa not really being a great person. But so Medusa was just a normal human. I believe it was her and Poseidon decided to get it on in one of Athena's temples. And of course, you know, that is desecrating a temple. So Athena got furious. Well, there's not much she can really do to another god. So she takes it out on Medusa and her sisters and turns them into the Gorgons that we know today, with Medusa being the most famous one of these. Like you said, she is a monster at this point because she's no longer human. She's this thing that now has, you know, snakes for hair. And can turn anyone to stone as long as they meet her eyes.
Yeah. Well, even so. is King Midas, is that a part of Greek mythology, or is that just a separate thing entirely?
I want to say he is. I'd have to look into it again, but it does seem like Midas is a part of Greek and Roman mythology. Who, yeah, you know, had the golden touch, turned things to gold just by touching it.
Well, double check.
Because I want to say it was, and I think he turned his son to gold.
Yeah. We'll double check that, and we'll talk about it later. Or we'll fix our if it's not true, then we'll go back and say that it's not.
Yeah.
But
I mean, other creatures too are the Chimera and the Manticore, which are pretty similar. I get them confused all the time. But those are two, and then I think it's not one you've necessarily heard a ton about, but it's a giant monster called Typhon, which I think is either like the father of the monsters or is essentially the king of the monsters as well too. But yeah, Greek slash Roman mythology has also introduced a number of these monsters into folklore at this point as well too, and a lot of them, like the Hydra, like Chimera. Like a Cyclops, have become well-known staples in, just monster culture in general, but in pop culture.
What about the Sphinx, or is that just more Egyptian mythology? Or does that kind of ooze into the Greek mythology as well?
I want to say it was kind of in both. Obviously, people look at it and say, well, clearly it was a part of Egyptian because they built this giant Sphinx, and I do think that was the case, but I do, from my recollection, I do think the Sphinx is also a Greek mythological monster as well too.
I mean, even dragons, kind of in a sense. You know, there's not a lot of like dragons, like the regular, like what we know of pop culture dragons, but they did have dragons back then, or in mythology as well.
No, and that's that's what most people kind of considered Scylla and the Hydra to be, were different forms of a dragon.
Dragons.
And even with the story of Perseus and Andromeda, which also had Medusa, I want to say there was two interpretations, technically three, but one of these is a newer, incorrect form, and I'll explain in a second. The two traditional ones is that it was either this giant whale or this giant dragon, and I don't remember which one is technically the original storytelling, was what was going to come and eat Andromeda, and that's why Perseus had to go and get Medusa's head, was to stop this monster by turning it to stone using Medusa's head.
People use
Now,
Medusa's head a lot.
But in pop culture, most people know that from the movie Clash of the Titans, and the famous "Release the Kraken" thing. Real great, I can enjoy that movie. Technically, is incorrect because the Kraken is not a Greek mythological monster. It's a Norse mythological monster.
Boom. Mic drop.
So fun fact for those about that. So, but that, I mean. Yeah, dragons are definitely a part of Greek mythology as well, too, in different forms.
Well, Greek mythology is definitely something that is well known. It's, touched on a lot, whether it be, old classic books or literature to even new books with Riordan and other movies and stuff like that have come out.
No, I mean, we could talk for hours if we wanted to go in depth on, the different stories and the things like that. There's a ton of characters that you can dive into, and it's one that I'm like, if you are more interested in, I always encourage people to look into Edith Hamilton's mythology. It's just what it called, straight mythology, because it really does. It holds all those stories. You can look and you can tell me, actually, you were wrong here when you read into those. But it is. It's just fun. Most of them and overall are pretty short, and a combination of them. In that book, they want to say they can get up to like 200 pages. But they make for really easy reads, and they're just interesting, And some of them are these big epic stories like Jason and the Argonauts, and then some of them are smaller, where it comes to like Echo and Narcissus, where Echo is this nymph who falls in love with this guy, and he doesn't love her, and I don't remember which god it is. I want to say it is Eros, who is the Roman version as Cupid, makes him fall in love with the first thing that he sees, and that happens to be his reflection, which is where we come up now with the term of being a narcissist, somebody who's in love with themselves. So, but yeah, I mean, it has a whole bunch of those stories, and so again, I shared another one there. We could talk for hours about those, but. It's always one for anyone listening. I would encourage you to check them out because they're really interesting. They're short, they're easy to read a lot of the times. And you can make yourself seem more cultured by doing so.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely could talk for hours about it, and that might actually be a topic for another time. Maybe we'll just talk about the stories of Greek mythology. But yeah, we need to move on to the Norse mythology. But that is it for part one of mythology, Greek versus Norse. Come back for part two when we talk about Norse mythology. See you then.